All right, here we go. Welcome to Wake in the Future. I am Pat.
What's up, guys? I am Joel.
All right, good morning, everybody. All right, it's November the 22nd, 2022. It's Tuesday morning, and we have a guest with us this morning. Actually, my brother Dan from Los Angeles. Dan, happy.
What's happening?
Happy you can join us, man.
Hey, thanks for having me on, man. It's good to be with you guys on this.
Yeah, no, it's a pleasure, actually. We talked about doing this a long while ago and just never made it happen. So, yeah, man, happy to have you. Good to see you. I don't get to see my brother too often, guys, so it's always fun when I do get to. And Joel, Christ, I don't think you've seen Danny in quite some time now. So
I don't even want to say how many years.
Yeah, it's been a hot minute, man.
Yeah, yeah,
it's been a long time.
Yeah, so guys, I wanted to get my brother on this morning so that we could chat a little bit about Bitcoin and kind of, you know, money as a whole in a sense, but specifically get a convo going on about Bitcoin and a lot of what we've been seeing going on with Bitcoin and cryptocurrencies kind of as a whole over this past, I'd say about a year now. It's really been, it kind of peaked out and then really started to fall back, and a lot of things happening, Dan. So what's your first initial, you know, kind of, what would you say to people to get them curious, I guess, if they're not already, about something like a Bitcoin?
So Bitcoin is freedom money.
Okay.
That's what it is, baby. It's the money. It's the money of the future. It is freedom. It is the money that connects the entire world together. And I'll be honest, like the whole idea of like a one world currency, right? Mm. I mean, years ago, of course, before Bitcoin, that sounded like a terrible idea, right? Because money today, how we know it, is centrally controlled by central bankers, right?
Yep.
Many of us think they're nefarious. They very well may be, who knows, but nonetheless, it's centrally controlled, right?
Right.
And it's that to me is a problem. So a one world currency coming from, say, you know, the UN or some kind of a global entity is a terrible, terrible idea. But with Bitcoin, because it's decentralized and there is no third party necessary for the sending and receiving of it between parties from all around the world, to me, that's what's going to help usher in a new generation of peace and cooperation and the idea of voluntary association, right? Which is, these are things that are very important to me.
Okay.
You know, I'm obviously against force and coercion, which are the typical tools of government. So
right.
This is how I see Bitcoin.
Okay, obviously, I mean, I think all three of us are on the same page. Something like the Federal Reserve here in the United States, talking about their CBDCs and all their central banks around the world talking about these things. I think we can all agree that that would be a negative. That is not a win there.
The most negative, actually.
Yeah. So what would make something like Bitcoin different than some of these other, you know, these multitudes of other cryptocurrencies that we see around there? So, I mean, you know, you call it a freedom coin, something that people can actually have that's decentralized versus, let's use just the other most common one people know, an Ethereum type of coin. What kind of a basic difference? And I know, you know, you're still getting there a lot of the ways with this whole thing. So
okay, so the biggest difference, I guess, with Bitcoin and say the cryptocurrency world at large is that Bitcoin doesn't have a CEO.
Okay.
There's no central point of control or manipulation or anything like that. It is truly decentralized, and it really is the only one that's truly decentralized. Every other cryptocurrency has a face, has a name, has a company, has something behind it that started it, which that is now a central point of failure or a place where government could attack.
Right.
Right. So the truly decentralized nature of Bitcoin is one of the main separations of it. Another quality is also that it is a finite amount, right? There is 21 million. There will only ever be 21 million Bitcoin. That will never change. Other cryptocurrencies, that can be arbitrarily changed by those who are in charge of the protocol, right?
Right.
What happened recently with Ethereum is they went from what's called proof of work to proof of stake. Now, these are the two kind of main mechanisms within the crypto world, proof of work and proof of stake. So Bitcoin is proof of work, which means that in order for it to come into existence, there's basically computers that do these incredibly hard mathematical problems. And when they solve those problems, they are rewarded with Bitcoin. I don't want to go too far into all that because if whoever's listening to this, right, if you don't know anything about it or if you've heard about it or, you know, I would say, you know, listen to what Joel says at the end of this whole thing when he wraps it up. Do your own research.
Yes.
and that's what this whole world of Bitcoin is about, really, is that to understand it, I mean, I'm hoping that somebody like myself, you hear me talking about it, it just piques your interest. Yep. You got to go dive. You got to go jump in and go down this orange wormhole, is what they would call it, you know? And yeah, man, with this, it's called, I'm hoping the orange pill, right? That's what the whole Bitcoin thing is, the orange pilling, right?
And I guess my number one question here would be the volatility of Bitcoin. Okay. I got a graph in front of me. It only goes up until May of 2022, but we start in 2010, we're looking at 9 cents for Bitcoin. We'll jump ahead to 2015, between 2015 and 16, we're up to 315. 2017, we're up to 2000, and we jump all 10,000 at the beginning of 2020, okay? All the way up to 68,000, and then now we're down at about 16,000, okay? So if I look at that, I can go, all right, that's pretty scary. If I'm investing in something where I started at 20, went up to 68, and then back down to 16.
Sure, absolutely. I mean, that's it's a fair, reasonable concern. Look at the stock market.
Yeah.
I mean, I can tell you that it's not much different. I mean, what, Netflix is down like 70%. You look at all these major, you know, companies and what the stock market has done recently too, you're dealing with a very similar type of volatility right now in the equity market. When you zoom out and you look at this, you know, Bitcoin is about 14 years old, right? January 3rd, 2009 mm-hmm. was when the first block was mined. From that point till now, it is a constant uptrend, right? Okay, yeah, we're down right now, but we're in a crazy macro financial situation right now. The world, the macro situation within the world is just out of control. What happened in 2020 with the whole pandemic and the amount of money printing, right? This had a lot to do with why everything went parabolic, right? Everybody got all this free money. We created what, nearly $10 trillion or something was injected into the markets, right? So all of that, of course, has an effect on what happened. And so what's happening right now is that we're coming down from that high. Now, that's going to change. The Fed is going to pivot. It's all going to, they're going to start printing again. They have no choice.
Right.
Okay. When that happens, we don't know. But right now we're in the depths of a bear market. Right. So when it comes to getting involved with Bitcoin, you don't want to YOLO in. Okay?
Yeah.
Do you invest? Do you invest at all, Joel, in anything? Do you invest in the stock market?
Very little bit, but very. We got a standard money market through actually my wife's mother worked in investing. So we do some just, you know, we do savings and I don't handle that aspect of it, I'll be honest.
So there's a term in the investing world called dollar cost averaging.
Yeah.
Okay. And basically what the idea behind dollar cost averaging is that you figure out how much money you make and what your bills and your expenses are, and you figure out how much you're able to invest. Okay. And you invest that amount every day, week, month, whatever, you know, usually putting it into a market or something like an asset like Bitcoin, and you just keep putting it in. And if for some reason, whatever the asset is, that it goes to zero or crashes, you're not devastated by it,
right?
Because you haven't, you know, hurt yourself in a way where you, like, again, you didn't YOLO in, right? So the idea is that if you start to investigate the asset and you start to have faith in it, and this would go for any equity too, like say you believe in Amazon, right? Say you believe in Netflix or you believe in some company, right? You're not just going to throw everything you got into that company. You're going to start to just buy a little bit at a time. Right. And then as it goes up, you're doing good. If it comes down, well, yeah. And when you look at markets are always like this, right? There's peaks and valleys. It's constant. But when you zoom out, it's always up.
Right.
Okay. It's always up.
Just don't follow Jim Cramer's advice, and that will hold true.
Just do the opposite of Jim Cramer and you're good to go.
Yeah. It's kind of like if Dr. Fauci tells you to take vitamin C. Cease taking vitamin C immediately.
Right.
Well, the dollar cost averaging, actually you got me started using an app for Bitcoin purchases where I do purchase a small amount per day. And the idea behind that is like you said, if I lose everything tomorrow, I'm not hurt. You know, it'll suck seeing my money go away, sure, but I'm not hurt by it. For a short while, Joel and I actually had some cryptos going from, some certain donations. We would put a small amount towards some certain cryptocurrencies and things like that. And, there's small profits here and there made, nothing major. It's not like, hey, all of a sudden we don't have to work anymore, like some of these random stories that you'll hear, from, whatever the crypto world or whatever it is. One of the things I look at though, and I've been trying to kind of change my mindset on, Bitcoin or any of these lately on this is stop looking at it in terms of its value in dollars, US dollars.
And fiat.
Yeah, fiat currency of any sort, exactly. No matter where you live, maybe it's a euro, yuan, whatever it may be. And that's a difficult task for, I think, a lot of people, including those of us that are, pretty in tune and awake to things, because right now everything is valued for us. When we go and we open up, let's say we're trading on and if you are, I advise you don't use a Robinhood, but I won't say that. I'm not giving advice, but if you're using something like a Robinhood, everything is valued in US dollars, right? So with something like Bitcoin, right? So if I were to have my Bitcoin right now, you call it the freedom money, right? So let's say all of the talk of the years comes true tomorrow and the US dollar ceases to exist. And I own, let's say today it's valued at $100,000 worth of Bitcoin, right? I know I'm just going against what I'm saying here, but
you just did it. Yeah.
Just keep up with me for a moment here, guys. And let's say it's let's say it's 20 million Satoshis, right? Just for example, and a Satoshi, guys, is a fraction of a Bitcoin. Dan taught me that one not that long ago, actually.
Well, it's a 100 millionth
of a Bitcoin. So let's say I have that, right? And tomorrow the US dollar no longer exists. I still have those. How am I going to figure out the value of that? So let's say you have something I want, Dan. Is it kind of like we're trading? It's almost like no technology involved. I have potatoes, you have onions. I need onions, you need potatoes. Here we go. We figure out how to make that trade. Is that how we're going to kind of base our value with our Bitcoin?
Yeah, I believe that that's going to happen at some point down the road. Now, when that happens, I'm not sure. Somebody to go look up and learn a little bit about this is a gentleman by the name of Jeff Booth. Jeff Booth, yeah. Okay. So he talks.
No, I'm sorry. I've read some
Booth
stuff
with an E on the end.
No,
I think it's
no.
TH. Yep.
He's got this book here, The Price of Tomorrow.
Okay.
And why deflation is the key to an abundant future.
Okay.
But, he's got some pretty good stuff in there, but there's a saying in the Bitcoin world that one Bitcoin still equals one Bitcoin, right? And the idea is that at some point, everything will start to price in Bitcoin, right? It's all going to start to, people are going to start to value things because the value of things in relation to Bitcoin go down, then the value of relation to fiat goes up, right? Because fiat's getting less valuable,
right.
and Bitcoin will become more valuable. So that's the, you know, the basic, like the deflationary idea with how that works. So that, now how that we get there is to be who knows what. And I think that fiat, and specifically the US dollar, because that is the reserve currency of the world, they are going to be side by side for a while. And I think that that's, I don't think the dollar is just going to go away. That's not going to happen, at least within the next 10 years, I don't think. You never know. I mean, Jesus, with the way things are in this world, we just never know. But
not without a major war.
Right, right. Well, you know, and getting into that, there's a whole nother, there's another guy to check out. His name is Jason Lowry. And he's got a whole thesis going right now on kinetic energy and all this stuff. He actually works for the government, and he's in the process of right now of trying to convince the US government that they are losing the war right now because they are not investing and they are not participating in the Bitcoin network.
So, oh, well, that brings something up I'll talk to you about after, but.
Okay. Well, listen, you know, Bitcoin is for everybody. That's the one thing too, you know, it's like, the other thing, okay, talking about, it's permissionless. Right, we were trying to talk about a few of the characteristics of Bitcoin. I'll take it off here a little bit. So
sure.
A couple of the things that we should want to think about, it is permissionless, it is immutable, it's trustless, it's decentralized, and it's finite. Permissionless, what does that mean? So many people in this world have no access to banking. Mm-hmm. Right, we're blessed here in America, although, you know, we can look at this place as a shit show, and it is on many levels. But when you compare it to many other parts of the world, especially in a financial thing, aspect of things, we have it great, okay? Most Americans have access to banking. You go outside into the third world countries, you can't get access to banking, right? So with Bitcoin, all you need is a cell phone, which everybody has those nowadays.
Yeah, right.
Right?
They don't have access to banking, but they do have access to their cell phones. Right?
All you need is a cell phone and an internet connection, and that's it. And you can transact with anybody else who's willing to transact with you.
Right.
When you start to learn about what's going on in Africa right now, especially too, there's a big Bitcoin movement going on over there, right? The Central African Republic was the second country in the world to adopt Bitcoin as legal tender after El Salvador, right?
El Salvador did that a few years ago now, right?
Yeah, September of 19, I believe, is when they did it. Or 20.
It might have been 20, actually, because
I remember 2 years
when I were doing a show once. Yeah.
Yeah, I think we just hit 2 years. So and then after that, the Central African, I think it's called the Central African Republic. They just recently did it too. And there's going to be more as we as we keep on going down the road here. But again, it is permissionless, and you wait to get a wallet, you don't need to put your name, birthday, social security. You don't need to prove that you've done anything. There's no, you have to ask for no permission whatsoever. Everybody in the world can participate. Right. And that's something that, you know, the bankers try to keep many people out of that system, right? They keep it for the top, right? So the immutable part of it is that this is the blockchain part. All transactions are final, and every transaction that has ever been done on the blockchain is viewed. You can see it all the way back to the very first one, and you can, and this is where you can get into some other on-chain data, which is like where you can see what kind of, which wallets are accumulating. Mm-hmm. And that's some data that we could talk about at some point too, because right now people like you and myself, which, you know, we're down at below the one Bitcoin level.
Yep.
Right, we are big time accumulating right now. Right, it's huge. The amount
you're saying the amount of people that are accumulating that are under one Bitcoin.
Yeah. Right, yeah. It's huge right now. Right, it's higher than it's ever been. Right, so because people are learning about this technology and they're getting excited about it, and things like Strike have now made it so much easier. Yeah. You know what? I got a thing on Strike today. You know what the minimum amount to buy of Bitcoin is now on Strike?
It's got to be under, 50 cents is what it was.
One penny.
Are you serious? Wow. That's interesting.
So, right, you can get into Bitcoin right now on Strike for as little as one penny. Okay. I'm curious what, I think it's like 60 something Satoshis or something.
Yeah.
Like that.
Well, now,
that's very interesting. Now, the one thing that will, you know, so I'm gonna be the other side of the coin here.
You're
right?
Always that guy.
Devil's advocate. I love it.
I'm going to be the devil's advocate.
Right.
So first of all, since 1992, after Ruby Ridge, in all my reading and all my research, every day the world is going to end. So I'm not too worried about that. But the other thing is that there's an ongoing trend in any history that you read. Is that governments, central banks, secret societies, and we go up the ladder. If there is something that's resourceful, they swoop in and they take it.
Yes.
We see it in Africa, we saw it in Australia, here in the States, everywhere. So how has Bitcoin been pretty much able to curb that? And when nobody else under any circumstances has ever been able to, from what I can tell.
So Bitcoin is really just ultimate property rights, right? It's the ultimate digital property rights. So there's another saying in Bitcoin that goes, not your keys, not your coins.
Yeah.
Now, when you open a wallet, right? So a wallet is where you would keep your coins, right? Or your satoshis, right? Right. So when you get a wallet, what you have to do is you have to write down your 12 or sometimes it's 24 words, mm-hmm. right? And those are your keys. So basically, nobody can touch your Bitcoin unless they have those words.
Yep.
That's it.
And they have to be spelled exact and, you know, all
and
the
in
rest.
The same order. Because yes. when you restore your wallet, you don't just put them in 1 through 12.
Nah.
It's going to say, what's word 7? What's
yes.
word one? What's yep. word 12? What's word six?
It essentially makes it uncrackable in a lot of ways. Now, I think I see where you were kind of going on this one, Joel, is this. So,
sure, I get it too, yeah.
So right now what we're seeing is okay, so Bitcoin is public. People can see these transactions. A lot of people dislike that. You get to something like a pirate chain or Monero, they call them privacy coins, and you cannot see. So, you know, there are some options out there as far as privacy. We'll stick more to the Bitcoin today, though.
And Lightning Network, which is a layer 2 thing on top of Bitcoin, yep. does offer more privacy.
Okay.
You'll find issues with that too. It's a newer element of Bitcoin. Yep. It's only about 5 years old, but that does offer a bit more privacy
okay.
than on-chain Bitcoin stuff.
But. So there'll be some potential options that will come out in the future as far as keeping the transactions of Bitcoin potentially private.
More private, yeah.
Now here's the thing. So it's a decentralized platform, right? So nobody, there are no CEOs, there is no physical building that holds, you know, Bitcoin, servers, things of that nature. People farm them around the world and all the rest. And they've been doing their best to give it a bad name, saying, oh, people use so much power to mine these Bitcoins and all the rest of these things.
It's all fun.
They're gonna keep on doing these things. Now, one thing that they do, however, have control over, and when I say they, I mean the central banks, right? The system, right? The governments and the central banks, they do have control over the exchanges. And we've seen a bit of that in the past few months with some of the bigger, well, I won't say bigger maybe, but mid-sized exchanges actually going down, although Celsius was a pretty large exchange. So what we're seeing is we are seeing some of the people that have YOLO'd in, as you said, right? They put everything in. Like I've read on some forums, people talking about, oh my God, I just lost my entire mortgage for the month. Like
yeah.
you have people that have truly turned this into a gambling situation. And this goes to all of the crypto coins out there, guys. A lot of these shit coins and these small little tiny coins that, you know, people... Oh, I made $10 million on this coin. And, you know, if you start to think a little bit more on that, it's like, okay, well, are you really? Because, you know, if you make all this money and try to sell it, but
well,
there's nothing there.
It's that
real quick, Joel, let
thing.
Me just finish this thought. I know
okay.
I'm like rambling. I apologize. So now they've lost all their money. Now they're screaming regulation. So one way that Bitcoin I see could potentially be regulated by the Fed and the central banks and the rest is by regulating the shit out of these exchanges and leaving the common person, the masses, unavailable, no access to these exchanges.
And Joel, did you want to say something?
No,
I have a okay, so that's absolutely fair. And, you know, yeah, they're going to probably come after the exchanges, no right. doubt. Bitcoin does not need the exchanges, though, to thrive and survive, right? Okay. It's peer-to-peer.
Okay.
It's peer-to-peer. That's it. Buyers and sellers, that they don't need the exchanges. We can go back and forth with each other.
Okay.
There, right now, a total of 19 million of the Bitcoin have been mined so far, right?
Out of the 21.
19 or just over 19. We crossed 19 a few months ago.
Okay.
And right now, every 10 minutes, 6.25 come into existence.
Okay.
So that gets cut in half in April of 24. We're going to cut that in half. It's going to go down to 3.125. 4 more years later from there, it gets cut in half again. So, but the majority of the Bitcoin have come into existence. How many of those Bitcoin do you think are on exchanges right now?
I would say maybe 50%.
It's about 3 million.
Oh, shit. Okay.
Right?
So very many.
No. The majority, and what's been happening over the last several weeks, too, is that we've had a massive drop of Bitcoin on exchanges, of course, because of all the craziness that's going on, right? With different exchanges going bankrupt and freezing withdrawals and stuff. And again, not your keys, not your coins, right?
Yep.
So these people are getting wiped out because, again, you know, FTX had like 3 billion of Bitcoin liabilities on their balance sheet, like that they owed people. How many Bitcoin did they actually have?
Yeah, they had 50,000, I think. Oh no, they had zero.
Zero.
Oh,
I know. I told you that the other day that they were. I don't know where I got that from. I don't think it was right. But okay. After the books have been zero Bitcoin, they had zero Bitcoin on their balance sheet.
Amazing.
So, yeah. So the amount of Bitcoin on exchanges is actually very little.
Okay.
Right. Okay. So. And something like, say, Strike or Cash App, right? Or even PayPal, you can buy it on PayPal. I wouldn't recommend that, but you can buy it.
Well, there are Bitcoin ATM machines around.
And you can get Bitcoin ATM machines
as
well.
They're all over the place out here.
Yeah, they're out here too as well. So the Bitcoin does not need the exchanges to thrive. The rest of the cryptocurrencies out there, yeah, but you know what? Honestly, I think they're all going to zero anyways. I think every Bitcoin, every altcoin out there right now is going to be gone at some point. Bitcoin is the only one that's going to actually survive all of this. Of course, there's a
conversation in of itself that could be a whole new episode.
Yeah, really could.
Sure, yeah. Listen, I mean, this is the subject matter is extremely vast, right?
Yeah.
With this, and again, I'm not an expert. I'm just I'm learning. I actually appreciate this opportunity to try and talk with you guys because it's a good challenge to help me organize my thoughts.
For Joel and myself both, with what we do with the show here is we talk to anyone and everyone because we don't claim to have a monopoly on knowledge. You know, I mean, we're just two average dudes that just enjoy learning something every day. And you've had the time and the ability to absorb and learn more about Bitcoin than I and then Joel. And, you know, therefore, boom, we can learn a little bit at least out of this. And I'm learning a bit. And, you know, there's a lot of potential things that could happen. Right. So, you know, one of the big ones obviously is that dollar collapse, right? Okay. Yeah. All right. But look at a Peter Schiff. It's been collapsing, you know, since 2000.
I love
now,
Peter, but yeah, he's wrong on Bitcoin, but I love him.
Peter, I had to mention Peter only because that kind of brings up my next little comparison, I guess we could say is, you know, gold and silver. Peter Schiff is a gold guy. He is a big gold guy. I like physical metals myself. I don't own too much in the way of any gold. Silver, I have a little bit, right?
Yeah.
So that is a great transaction for somebody sitting in front of me, right? If I have an ounce of silver and they have something that I would want or need, and they maybe want or need the silver, I can make that transaction very easy because they're right in front of me. Something like a Bitcoin. And this is where a lot of us struggle, I think. And I'll say I struggle. I won't say a lot of us. I struggle. This is where the technology-driven world that we live in has to kind of become a reality to us. So the reality is we live in a technology-driven world. All right, countries, you can do business in other countries with ease now. And if that goes away tomorrow, then we have nothing to worry about. Bitcoin's moot, doesn't matter. Your gold and silver can help you, but it's probably not going to go away tomorrow. It's probably actually going to increase. So having something like Bitcoin can be that that exchange that we're looking for. Versus being caught up in the digital dollars and the digital yuans and all these CBDCs that they're really going to, in my opinion, in the next few years, really push hard on.
Sure. Well, the CBDCs are dangerous as all hell, man, because, you know, what they can do with that is, I mean, they could limit your spending on certain items.
And area.
I mean, they can literally program your money in any which way, and they could just take it all from you at any point. They could shut it off. You know, it's such the CBDC is the worst possible thing that could happen to humanity. Yep. If that happens, if that happens, everything is just completely done. We're complete slaves at that point. Yep. So we have to avoid the CBDC at all costs. That is.
Love it.
Yeah, that's a big fight. Yeah. And I mean, and again, Bitcoin is the complete antithesis to that, right? Because it's completely permissionless, whereas CBDC, it's all about permission. And it's like, you have to obey and act properly, or they will take it from you or turn you off or not allow you to do it. Bitcoin, that will not happen. They can't take that from you. So
it's like this month's chocolate ration has been increased from 30 grams to 20 grams.
Exactly.
I think now, that's how.
You know. Now, listen, I like gold and silver too, right? I'm certain I have silver. I have some gold, right? I believe in those assets as well, right? I think that it's important that you have some of that. Also, I buy stocks as well. I mean, it's like I'm not a, you know, Bitcoin. I'm Bitcoin only when it comes to the cryptocurrency type. Or, gotcha. You know, those types of things. But I'm still in the equity markets with my Roth, right? And I do have possess silver and gold. And I, you know, I find that those are two very good things, you know. So gold historically has been money, right?
Yeah.
So 5,000 years, right? So check it out. There's a guy I love to listen to. His name is Robert Breedlove. And he's got a YouTube channel. It's under his name, but it's called the What is Money Show. And so he goes into some super deep conversation. Like, you can find 10 hours of conversations with this guy. Oh, it's disgustingly deep. I've only been able to do it with a few of his things, but he's one of my favorite intellectuals in the Bitcoin space.
Is it by chance called the Money Guy Show?
No. What is Money Show?
Okay. Oh, Robert Breedlove. Here he is.
Robert Breedlove. Yeah. So he's one of my favorite intellectuals in the Bitcoin space. So he basically takes money and he breaks it down into five characteristics of what makes a great money. It's durability, divisibility, recognizability, portability, and scarcity. Okay. So gold historically has filled all of these things. Yep. However, it falls very short on portability and the divisibility.
Yeah.
Okay. That's where it falls short. So paper money was a technology devised by man to fix those shortcomings of gold.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's why we have paper money instead of just gold. So that paper money was a representation of gold, because now it's easier to carry the paper money around, and you can divide it up into small amounts by using coins that represent it. Right. So that's why paper money was created, to fix that shortcoming of gold. Bitcoin, right, covers all five of those things perfectly.
Yeah.
It's all
I will agree with that. Yeah.
Yeah. And this is And this is why it's going to become the sort of the base layer monetary element within humanity as we move forward. Yeah. So,
yeah, I like know. It. Joel, you got to have something here, man.
No, I'm just, yeah. just doing that.
Joel's
do,
like,
man.
I'm
just,
absorbing.
I just sit back and listen and say, you know, obviously, well, maybe not obviously, one thing I enjoy doing a lot is learning. And I enjoy, I think this is a great example of, you know, I'm coming from a different side of the fence as Dan, but we can show what a debate actually looks like, right? Mm-hmm. And kind of people who can disagree and have an intelligent conversation. But I do like that those 5 points that makes that makes a lot of sense. And you know, I think a lot of why I have so many questions, I'm such a skeptic because I've just I've looked at everything for so long, my whole life, and nothing has ever been what it seems. Nothing has ever been, you know, on the surface, which is also true here. There's a lot of differences I didn't even know about.
Well, if you go below the surface of Bitcoin, Joel, you will find that it is not what it'll change your perspective. It is truth. It's absolute truth. It is mathematical truth.
And this is where you should.
That's what Bitcoin is,
because it is math.
It's pure math. It's pure mathematics. Well, it is private property secured through mathematics. That's right. What it is.
And I know for a lot of people, and this is, I think, Joel, you kind of fall into this category a bit, is the technology and the idea that there is no physical Bitcoin in the sense of what we know. And this is where I think the gold people really kind of make a little bit more noise in a lot of ways. Is I physically have my gold bar right here in my hand, so you cannot take it unless you can overtake me. Versus, you know, well, I have my Bitcoin here in my Exodus wallet, you cannot take it from me. No, you can't take it from me, but it can be lost, and it's lost in some ways too, because you can always lose the physical version of things, right? The other big one on Bitcoin is what happens if, right? Let's say, for example, there is somebody that's out there that can start to overtake the internet, right? Let's say that there is an entity out there that can start to take down certain portions or certain parts of it. That's a whole nother thing. And that to me is something that it's a legitimate fear, but at the same time, that's kind of like the
why would they do that?
People, the end of the world as we know it, people.
But why would they do that? Like, what's the motivation?
Trust me, I don't fall in that category, but I do know there are people out there. So it's kind of like the dollar tomorrow being gone theories that are out there. Is there some truth behind them? Sure, there can be. But what are the odds? That's what we have to keep in mind, in my opinion.
No, well, the dollar will go away. Odds. The dollar is going away. I mean, whether we see it in our lifetime is debatable, but it will go away. All fiat currencies die. They all do. It's an inevitability. But the internet, I don't know if that's going to necessarily die. And again, what's the motivation for somebody to try to do that? The amount of money it would cost them to do it, and then for what? Right. And this goes to also with the Bitcoin network, right? So technically, you could take over the Bitcoin network if you had 51% of the hash power, right? Which is basically 51% of the mining capabilities.
Okay.
Technically, you can manipulate the blockchain, right? And you could manipulate it for your own benefit, but you would have to maintain that 51%. For a very long time, and the amount of money and energy and coordination that it takes to do that, it just makes it completely unlogical to do that, because it's going to cost you way more than what you're going to get for it. You're better off just going along with the system.
Well, is it going to cost more than what you'll get for it if you're somebody that is looking to remove the system completely?
Well, you'd have to do that, and that's like where a lot of my skepticism comes from, is this whole technology as a whole, which Bitcoin is a part of this technology. If you read Brzezinski's Between Two Ages from the 60s and what he was telling about in 1963, 64, whenever he wrote this, nobody would have believed that in 50 years, this is what we were going to have going on. Right. Yet he told us specifically what pretty much what we have going on now with the mass manipulation of the human mind. Okay. So that tells me that, and it's clear to see that technology is not having many benefits on society as a whole. There are a select few like Pat and Dan and myself who could step back and actually think for ourselves and make decisions based on that. And I think that's where a lot of people's skepticism comes from. But also at the other end of the coin, it ain't going anywhere. It's not going anywhere.
Well, you're talking about the mass distraction.
Just that technology as a whole. I'm talking about the huge umbrella of technology, which Bitcoin falls under. It is, and there's nothing that we can do about that. So like what we say, Pat, is, but here it is. So we could try to fight technology all we want, but it's not going anywhere.
Bitcoin right now is like where the internet was in, say, 1992.
Yeah. MS-DOS.
So think about MS-DOS. I mean,
online yet, guys.
I'm not saying in its capabilities, but I'm saying in its adoption and understanding, right? Because and so what's going to happen over the next, like, imagine where the internet has, what the internet has done for our lives from 92 until now, 30 years, right? Yeah. So what that did, that was for information, right? That was what the internet changed how we get and share information with each other, right? And it's, there's honesty, right? Because I mean, okay, yeah, there's some censorship from companies and stuff like that, but you, if you want to, you can find the people that you want to connect with and have these, I mean, look at where we're all in different points of the world right now, or the country, whatever, you know, and we're able to just get here and talk, right? That's an amazing fucking thing that 30 years ago was just like,
yeah.
You know, and we could all do it on our fucking phones if we wanted to. We don't have to be on computers, right? Yeah. So 30 years ago, that was like science fiction, right? Yet here we are. Now, the technology moves exponentially as well, right? So it's the next 10 years are going to cover what we went and what we did in the last 20 years. Right. And then the next 5 years after that are going to kind of do what we did in, you know, so this, it's this whole exponential thing. So what Bitcoin is going to do for the communication of value, which is what money is.
Right.
Money is communication. It's how we communicate value to each other. Yep. Right? It's how we say, okay, my time is worth this. If you give me your time and give me this service, I'm willing to pay you this for your time and your service and your help, right? And I give you money for it or whatever you actually would want, right? So because Bitcoin is completely unmanipulatable, right? You cannot manipulate how much there is. You can't create any more of it, right? It's a solid thing that you just cannot.
We can see they're able to manipulate how it's valued in fiat currency. And that's where I think myself included, a lot it's of tough. People, we kind of get, we lose the vision, I think, that you're kind of giving us is we see it valued in USD or in whatever fiat currency.
I still do too, man.
And the major manipulations, right? Exactly.
Yeah, it's hard to break that.
So, you know, fast forward 5 years, and you know, if more people, like you say, it's like 1992 internet, right? So, in the sense of how many people are using it, right? How many people worldwide are actually utilizing Bitcoin? Fast forward 10 years or 5 years, even, and we may see that number quadruple, whatever. And now, instead of people in that group valuing it at all in USD or other fiat currencies, it's your time is worth X amount of Satoshis to me. Mm-hmm. Are you willing to accept that?
Good
services, etc. And that's going to be, to me, I see that as a major hurdle. And that is where, you know, so many people in the truth world, right? In our communities, and myself included, as always, you would think we would adopt something like this more, but the skepticism, right? There's so much skeptics, and rightfully so, about all of these things moving forward. Like I've even said it on the show that I feel like Bitcoin could be something that the CIA or the government or the Fed actually started and has a way to pull the plug on at any point so that they can say, look, here is our CBDC. Take this and we will have control. Well, that's
you can't pull the plug on it. That's the thing. That's what you have to understand, that it can, that can't happen.
Yeah.
It's the decentralized nature of it prevents that from happening.
Right.
That's why it's like, okay, maybe, you know, if the CIA did create this or it was something like that.
It got out of their hands?
I mean, they lost control. There's no way. But I don't think so. It's the cypherpunks, man. These are all the hackers. These were the computer hackers that did
Alex,
this.
Right? Alex would agree with you on that one. He knows a lot about these hackers, man.
Yeah, man. It's all them. It's all like they're called the cypherpunks, which I don't know much about it. But that's what, you know, because digital cash was the before Bitcoin existed.
Yeah.
But it always ended up with this central point of failure. And they had a problem, which was something called the double spend problem. Right. And the double, basically in the virtual world, like files, right, which is all this stuff is, it's just information. It's right. So easily copied and then redistributed. Take an MP3, for instance. Right. If I have an MP3, I can just copy it and send it and send it and send it and send it. Right. So when it comes to digital currency, what's to stop me from sending it to you and then sending it to somebody else too? Right.
This is what
Satoshi fixed. This is what he figured out. He figured out how to stop that fix that double spend problem, right? If you go read the white paper, this is what he talks about.
Yeah.
Right. So that's what got fixed there. I wanted to go real quick to the gold thing and the silver thing you're talking about. So how you said if you have gold and silver, you know, in your house, it's like, yes, you have it in your hands, right? So this makes you vulnerable to what's called the $5 wrench attack. Okay, and this is where Bitcoin, this is where Bitcoin protects you from a $5 wrench attack. Because if somebody knows you have gold or silver in your place, right? They just come in with a wrench, say, give me your fucking gold or I'm going to break your fucking face, right? I'm going to fucking break your face.
And even if you and have if you it say, I'm safe, not gonna, they can still take it after.
They take the fucking out. Safe, right? Yeah. Exactly. But if they don't know those 12 words, they ain't getting your Bitcoin.
Right.
So there's no motivation for them to kill you, maim you, hurt you, because even if they do, they're getting nothing.
Yeah.
Right. And this is another thing. And if you learn how to properly secure your Bitcoin, which those 12 words are the first step, but then there's another thing called multi-sig, which this is another layer. And obviously the more Bitcoin you accumulate, the more you're going to want to learn how to get into multi-sig. And that's where you have these words that are, they're split up and to put in different places, and you need two people to sign, and you know, it makes it more difficult to actually access it.
Right.
But that's the one thing with gold and silver that, okay, yes, you physically hold it, but also it can be physically taken from you and your life could be the cost.
Right.
Whereas with Bitcoin, that's not going to happen because they take your life. That's all they've taken. They ain't getting the coins.
And that's always something.
Well, that would be a very, that would be a very strong person that, you know, I'll get the 12 words out of this people. I mean, but I see what you're saying, and that is a very good thing. And like, we discussed that a lot when we were talking about the, you know, storage for food, you know, preparing and getting some extra food storage. Probably not a good idea to tell all your neighbors like, oh, I got an extra 20 pounds of rice because your friendly neighbor, who's hungry, isn't so friendly anymore.
Right.
And that is a great point.
It's interesting. I've popped up three tabs now since we've started talking, the ones that I found that I'll put in the show notes for people. And I totally forgot about the white paper. So that'll be the first link that I put in the show notes for everybody, because it will give you the information necessary on Bitcoin. And I will admit, I have not read the entirety of it.
It's really nerdy.
Yeah, it is. It is. I remember starting to get into it a little bit and I was like, whoa, you know, but remember
a lot of it I don't understand, but it's the equations and shit. It's like,
Yep. I'm also somebody that, you know, though I do have some Bitcoin, you know, I'm not somebody that wants to go super crazy and learn all the technicals. If you are somebody that wants to go there, you know, then definitely check this out. And, you know, if you know somebody, share it with them, let them know, because if there is, if the future of digital and technology is inescapable, and I think the three of us can kind of agree that it is pretty well inescapable at this point in time.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
We need to understand that a digital currency of sorts is inevitable. And
we already have it in a way. Think about it right now, right?
Yes, we do.
How much cash?
Our debit cards, our
credit
cards.
It's all.
Yep. But I'm saying right now, that is all centrally controlled.
Absolutely,
that is all linked directly to our fiat dollars. And we know that these central bankers are working on central bank digital currencies. We've seen them roll them out in certain places, Jamaica and some of the smaller island countries around the world. And these are pilot programs for the world. These are not pilot programs for the countries. They're pilot programs for the world. And we know that that's the direction they're going. And we also know all the negatives that are associated with that. They will have 100% control right down to where in a geographical location we can spend that money. Bitcoin can be, and I'll just say can be our way out of that. But it is going to take myself and everybody else out there that understands what I said first, to do more digging, to do more research, to learn more about it. And then we need to, as a whole, figure out how we're going to utilize this Bitcoin to avoid what's coming with these central bank digital currencies, if that makes sense.
No, it does. And and to be honest, I mean, right now, Bitcoin is not even ready to handle that, right? It's not ready yet. It needs more development, right?
Okay.
It needs more layer two and even layer three type stuff that needs to be placed on top of it to handle it. Because one of the main problems with Bitcoin, right, is the block size and the amount of transactions it can process. It can't process enough transactions to keep up with global demand right now. The Lightning Network can.
Okay.
Right. The Lightning Network can handle it once it becomes robust enough. That's something worth looking into. I don't want to get into that right now. But
yeah, we're damn near out of time. It's amazing how fast an hour always goes.
I know. I would just say one thing that anybody who's slightly interested or even skeptical, try to look into it a little bit. Do a little bit of digging on, and again, watch out for the conflation between cryptocurrency and Bitcoin. Yeah. Where I'm coming from, I'm what's called a Bitcoin maximalist at this point, because I've learned a few things over the last several months. I wasn't a Bitcoin maximalist when I first started getting into cryptocurrency. I was buying all these other shit coins and all that stuff. But at this point, it's like after the amount of reading and watching and listening I've done, I've become a Bitcoin maximalist. But start to just look into it. And I would just say to start to dip your toes and just buy a little bit and see what it's like. You can get on the app Strike. And like I was saying today, they actually made it so you could buy as little as one penny. You know, it's like, so, and you know, buy a penny a day.
You have a wallet that you're transferring it to very often, guys.
Right.
Because,
and that's
the
other
platforms,
thing.
These exchanges can go away tomorrow, as we've seen with Celsius, FTX, and many others.
Right. And then if anybody does do that and you have questions, I mean, I would just say reach out to Pat or Joel or whatever. They could put you in contact with me or even answer it themselves. Yep. Pat knows. I know Joel's not in on this yet, but I'm going to orange
pill. He's a work in progress.
I'm going to orange pill you, bro.
We're getting there. No, and it's honestly it's nothing I've ever closed my mind to. It's just
you haven't opened your mind to it yet.
I haven't taken the plunge, so I'm definitely going to read the nerdy paper, the white paper, and, you know, because I love math equations and that'll keep me interested. But you know, a lot of things that I would dive in would definitely have to come from Pat or Dan. And if I was ever to invest a penny a day, of my money, it would have to come from somebody I trust. Because even a penny a day, if I don't trust them, I ain't giving them a penny. Sure. Well, I know. you get what I'm saying.
Yeah. Well, that's why taxes are so genius, because none of us trust those bastards, and that's where the extortion comes in. Well, Dan, we've run out of time here, but dude, I thank you for coming on, man. We really appreciate it. Sure. We have a long ways to go, I think, in all of what we discussed today, but the key is to at least getting started on it.
It is. We do have a long road. We have a long road, but Bitcoin is hope. That's how I see it.
Yeah.
It's a hope for the future. It's a hope for the kids, man. That's what I see it as. So
excellent.
Thanks for the time, guys. I definitely appreciate being here. I appreciate it. So good
to
see you.
That's great. And good point, Dan. That's what we're looking for. We're all looking for a little bit of hope. And there's absolutely nothing wrong with that. Hope. We can get very far with hope and being a good person. It doesn't, and it's those things are actually totally free. And Dan, thank you very much. And as always, don't take Dan's word for it. Definitely do not take Pat's word for it. Under no circumstances take my word for it. Do your own research, come to your own conclusions and your own truth. Remember, guys, freedom starts at home and from within. Laters.